Hello and welcome to the MLB.com Fantasy 411 podcast. I am not Mike Ciano. I am not Corey Schwartz. I'm your guest host, Dylan Higgins, and I'm joined by Fred Zinke. Fred, how you doing?
I'm terrific. I'm excited to be here filling in this week.
Yeah, Mike and Corey got a little bit of a break, just like a lot of the players got during the All-Star break. And so we're stepping into guest host here on the 411. And Fred, you were just on the last episode. I'm a new face here, but we both write at MLB.com in the fantasy department. So yeah, excited to get here and get involved and picking up right after the All-Star game. Fred, did you watch the All-Star game?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, it was exciting. It was the Mike Trout show once again.
It feels like everything's the Mike Trout show lately.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's complaining, though, except maybe the National League. Yeah, so in terms of fantasy, is there much to draw from the All-Star game for you from like anything going forward? I mean, it's one game, but did you see anything that really stuck out to you?
No, not really. I mean, it's, you know, it's all the greatest stars getting together and having really limited sample sizes, you know, and, you know, one or two opportunities to prove themselves. So I don't think there's really that much you can take from it.
I mean, Mike Trout was still good, which doesn't surprise anybody. I want to ask you about him, though. Heading into the second half, I mean, he was pretty well the consensus number one player going into the year, and he hasn't really disappointed, but is he still your number one player going into the second half? I mean, if you were to try and find a flaw in his game, I guess it's that he doesn't steal many bases anymore, but he's still been incredible. Great batting average, lots of power, lots of counting stats, but is he your consensus number one for the second half?
No, he's not. If we were drafting today, you know, for the rest of the season, I would take Paul Goldschmidt number one.
Sure.
And, you know, Goldschmidt's been even better with the batting average. His power has been great. And like you said, Goldschmidt's running more than Trout.
Yeah.
In fact, if I was a Trout owner, forgetting the positions, I might be inclined to take that All-Star game performance, jump off it, and offer him straight up to the Goldschmidt owner today.
Yeah. No, for sure. Goldschmidt's been incredible. I can see that. Is there anybody else for you? I mean, some people might say Bryce Harper. There's still a little bit of risk there, but the ceiling is easily as high, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. The ceiling's as high, but there's a little more risk there because he's like jumped a massive amount this season, whereas Trout's been awesome now for several seasons in a row. So, you know, Harper could equal Trout in the second half. He probably doesn't pull away from Trout in the second half, whereas Trout could pull away from Harper. So I think Trout's pretty clearly number two if you don't like him number one.
Right. And there's not really a wrong answer there. You wouldn't be upset with whoever you have. I pulled away also from the All-Star game. Clayton Kershaw allowed a pair of runs. Again, such a small sample size, and there can be some theories about guys not throwing as hard as they need to. Who knows? Hard to get in their head. But Kershaw had, in some aspects, a little bit of a disappointing first half, I suppose, at least on the surface numbers. His strikeout-to-walk ratio was still incredible, 160 strikeouts, 27 walks, and 123 innings. It's kind of like Mike Trout, where maybe he's not the number one overall pitcher, but if he isn't, he's darn close. If you're a Clayton Kershaw owner, are you worried at all heading into the second half?
No, I'm not. You know, he might even be a really slight buy-low option right now. I mean, he could end up with 300 strikeouts this season, which is incredible. Yeah. And we all know he has the talent at any point in time, you know, to throw up zeros, two, three, four starts in a row.
Yep.
And be the best. He could be the best fantasy starter in the second half and no one would be surprised. So right. I'm not worried about him at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, a lot of those peripheral numbers make it look like he's been, I hesitate to use the word unlucky, but he could be his old self in the second half for sure. Things look good. I would not be worried about him despite allowing a pair of runs in the All-Star game. We agree. He should be fine. Andrew McCutchen also had a pretty good game. And he disappointed a little bit, had an ice cold April, but seems to have picked it up in the last few months. So his first half numbers are good, but not McCutchen like. You fine with him in the second half too, I assume?
Yeah, I'm fine with him. I think he's fallen a little bit, at least rest of season for me, just because of the lack of steals. You know, he only has a few steals he was a top three pick in almost every draft, definitely top five in all of them this year. And to be that, his power is fine. It's not amazing. So to be that high of a pick, he needs to steal 20-ish bases.
Yeah.
And he's not going to get there this year. And I don't even know if he'll have that kind of a pace in the second half.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, he's almost more like a late first rounder right now, which is still terrific.
Yeah.
And maybe by next season, you know, with the knee and everything, he'll be healthier next season at the beginning and we'll be back to a top five pick. But I do think his stock's fallen a little bit.
Yep. He stole 5 stolen bases in the first half, which is not what you expected, for sure. Makes fantasy owners a little bit disappointed if you took him 3rd overall or so. But I don't know. I'm not abandoning ship. I'm not selling. I mean, if somebody will give you 100 cents on the dollar, I suppose. But, you know, I'm not rushing to get rid of him or anything. Anybody else from the All-Star game that stuck out to you based on their performances?
Oh, I thought Lorenzo Cain looked, really looked like he belonged out there, and he's someone who has really ascended this year. And mm-hmm. I don't know if a lot of fantasy owners realize that, you know, he's really, you know, a nice like second or third tier level outfielder. There's a little bit of power. There's plenty of speed. And now that the Royals have him hitting in a key lineup spot, yeah. he really does have the whole package now where he can drive in his share of runs.
Right. And now that the Royals actually score plenty of runs, you know, they're a pretty light offense last year and they're not an amazing offense this year, but they're definitely putting across more runs. So that sure. helps his value quite a bit. The only thing that makes me slightly nervous about him is maybe a lot of his value comes in the form of batting average. And to me, that's one of the riskiest stats to invest in. But he has shown consistently that he is a 300-plus hitter. It's not going to shock me if he hits above 300 rest of the way. I don't think he's going to sink. But that's the only thing, is that it seems like a lot of his value comes from that. That said, he's good at doing that. You know, some pop, plenty of speed. I agree. Lorenzo Cain is becoming a pretty big fantasy outfielder, you know, might be what, a 3rd rounder next year if he's not careful.
Yeah, maybe at least in deeper leagues he might be, or at least 4th or 5th in typical leagues.
Yeah, he's getting up there. So, yeah, he had another good game and he's the guy to watch in the second half for sure. Next, let's look at some news that was going on, mostly right before the All-Star break, before everybody took a break. A lot of injuries popping up that will, of course, affect a lot of these guys going into the second half. Dee Gordon missed the All-Star game because he messed up his thumb sliding, and that's kind of something you worry about with these guys that steal all these bases. And some people might say why Mike Trout's not running so much is they want to make sure he stays healthy. It's dangerous, but Dee Gordon messed up his thumb. Word is that he's going to avoid the DL. If so, I assume you're not really worried about him. It's not his legs. It's not his feet. Like, should be okay running going in the second half.
Yeah, I think so. If he's playing, then he's running because that is the basis of his game. Mm-hmm. Immediately when he had the thumb dislocation, I wasn't as worried. There was a lot of panic, but I have some experience with that in knowing about that injury, and I knew if there wasn't ligament damage and if there hadn't been a piece chip off the bone that it might not be a long-term injury. And he was lucky, but I mean, and so are his fantasy owners, but he should be fine.
He'll still keep running. Yeah. Did you mess up your thumb? What'd you do?
No, I haven't, but I have, coached some young athletes who have, and I've seen them come out and come back in without any significant damage.
Yeah. Also, Clay Buchholz, a little more worrisome, messed up his elbow. MRI showed no ligament damage, but you never want to see your pitcher go on the DL with an elbow problem. Are you worried about Clay Buchholz a little bit more?
A little bit. I mean, the timing's just terrible for him because he was having his best stretch in a really long time and, you know, and had really, become almost a high end starter. And maybe you can't count on him to stay at that level, but he was that recently and maybe he could have, you know, have kept it up for a while. And now you just don't know what you're going to get back from him. This might be a nice time to buy low on him though. I mean, his owner's probably worried about the elbow. He's maybe worried about regression. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can pick him up cheap and he comes back in early August and gets right back to what he was doing.
He's always been a very wild card of a player because his upside is pretty high, but his downside can be pretty low too. We've seen kind of some Jekyll and Hyde from Clay Buchholz, but looked pretty prime for a good second half, and unfortunately not a lot of info out of Boston yet on what's going on with his elbow, which could be a good thing. It means it's maybe not a disaster, but if you're feeling lucky, that's an okay buy low there. Alex Gordon messed up his groin really badly. That looked really bad on the field, and the prognosis is out 8 weeks. Not much to do there with Gordon, right?
No, I think if you don't have DL space, I think you need to drop him. He was playing fine prior to the injury, but not... You know, he's not like Stanton or Cabrera where you need to find a way to hold him. If you're in a 1 year league and, you know, it's like a 10 or 12 team mixed league, like just let him go unless you have the DL space for him.
He's another guy that wasn't really running and not a lot of his value came in running, but he was known as an all around guy because he would chip in 10, 15 bases and he hadn't been doing that at all. And I guess a little bit of a down year for him, but still a good player. But yeah, he's not doing that, and he's going to come back maybe with a couple weeks left. I agree. There's not much to hang on to there in redraft leagues. And then let's talk Steven Matz, who messed up his shoulder, and there's a little bit of drama surrounding this, too. Steven Matz was a really exciting player, came up for the Mets, so, you know, top prospect, looked great on the mound and at the plate. Just kind of exciting things. Another good young Mets starter, and then his shoulder's hurting, and word was that he had, you know, mentioned that his shoulder hurt before his last start, and then it came out, and now he's on the DL. What's going on with Steven Matz?
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating for Mets fans, and it's frustrating for fantasy owners. It's like we're never going to see all these great young Mets pitchers in the rotation at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that'll happen next year when Wheeler gets back. But, you know, I think Matz, if you have DL space or if you're in a deep league, is worth hanging on to because he was looking like someone who could be a real difference maker before the injury. Let's say he misses about six weeks or so. By the time he shut down for three, it takes him about three to work his way back. Yep. You know, you could still get, you know, close to 6 weeks out of him. Something maybe some fantasy owners aren't aware of is this season's going to run fairly late. It's around the 5th of October is the last date of the season. So you're going to have him for part of August, all of September, and even probably a start in October, right? He might be worth hanging on to.
And do you feel like this is one of those situations where it might completely come down to whether the Mets are in contention? Because if they're wrapping it up, they might not bother pushing him back and let him rest for next year. But if they're trying to chase their way into October, they might need him, you know, and that could get some starts out of him. You know, you're kind of reaching that point of wondering, you know, whether those guys will get used.
I actually thought of him a little differently too, in the sense of this could help him pitch later into the season.
Yeah.
As it's going to limit his innings naturally. And the Mets were pretty aggressive with DeGrom last year and they let him go, you know, right up to the end, you know, in his quest to win Rookie of the Year. So I know Matz isn't going to win Rookie of the Year, but they've shown that they'll go that route with a rookie. And, you know, now that the innings won't be a concern because he's shut down for a while. Yeah. You could have him. I mean, owners who play in head to head leagues and are thinking playoffs.
Yes.
Here's a guy who will come back shortly before playoff time.
Yeah. That's a good point. Well, he was a top prospect for the Mets. He has not only the pedigree, but had the minor league numbers too. So when he came up and excelled, it's not shocking that he's doing this well. So I think we believe in him. And if you got the DL room for him, yeah, good point, especially in head-to-head leagues. This is a guy that could definitely still make an impact this year. And then the last injury we're going to talk about, real tragic, Jason Grilly blew out his Achilles. He's done for the year. I'm sure some people are asking about his career, because he's getting up there in age. But, he's gone and obviously not closing games for the Braves anymore. In steps Jim Johnson. But, yeah, there's not much analysis to go there on Grilly. Sorry, if you have him in his redraft league, he's gone. And I don't know that you can really keep him either. But, yeah.
Yeah, if you had Grilly, you know, you might have been close to the end with him anyways, because he was a really popular trade deadline you know, candidate. And if he moved to another team, it might have been into a setup role. It depends, obviously, which team he went to. But
yeah,
you might have lost out on several months of him closing, but you might have also just lost out on about 3 weeks of him closing before he became a setup man on the Nationals or a team like that.
Yeah, not how you want to see his season end. He was doing pretty well. In steps in Jim Johnson. We'll talk about closers here in a bit. But, that's it for Grilly owners. And then, you want to talk about Brian Johnson coming up for the Red Sox. What can you tell me about Brian Johnson? This is not an injury. It's a little more exciting promotion of a prospect.
Yeah, and I mean, he's the main, I guess, beneficiary of Buchholz going on the DL. And, you know, a word that a lot of scouts use and analysts use to describe him as polished and consistent, that is, I think, a good sign that he could have some immediate success. I know the AL East is a tough place to pitch, but we've seen Eduardo Rodriguez come up as a, you know, young lefty and have good success so far. I think Johnson could hit the ground running. He's a little more mature than some of the pitchers that come up, and he's had a really good season in AAA, and the Red Sox have a decent, you know, roster to support him. So I know they haven't been great this year, but they've turned around a little bit lately, and he could join in that. I'd be interested in him in the deeper mixed leagues right away.
Yeah, that AL East is pretty wide open, and I don't think the Red Sox are about to suddenly become sellers. I mean, maybe it depends on how the next few weeks go, but he'll be pitching, and they may need him. They need the pitching depth, and yeah, it's an underperforming roster, and I don't know. Like you said, Eduardo Rodriguez came right up and proved it immediately. Is he a must-add in every format for you, Brian Johnson?
I'd say not 10-team. 12-team, I'm probably looking at it. I want to see where they slot him in the rotation. They haven't announced their post-break rotation and kind of what his initial three or four starts are scheduled to look like and how difficult they will be. That would kind of decide it in 12-team. In 15-team, I think I would go for it. There's a permanent rotation spot there for him, and I know his innings have been limited enough that he could stick for most of the, or all the rest of the season, even if Buchholz comes back. So, yeah. I mean, with Matt Masterson was in the rotation and he doesn't really probably belong. So, you know, Johnson can control his own destiny here and you could have him the whole second half.
Yeah, you saw Rodriguez do the same thing. Came up kind of a spot start and was awesome and then got another start and was great. And I think pretty much fought his way into that rotation because there's room. Like they have five starters, but they're not all performing that well. And if you can come up and pitch, there's a spot for you. So Brian Johnson, yeah, worth a flyer for sure heading into the second half. You mentioned the trade deadline. I think there's a lot to talk about in fantasy. You know, we're a few months in, things are settling down, but this is a big opportunity to shape things going forward. And a lot of these guys could be on the move. We got a list of them here. Fred, who are you thinking might be the biggest mover for you that could change their fantasy value the most?
Well, I think, you know, you talk about some of the guys, some of the pitchers like Cueto, you know, Johnny Cueto, Mike Leake, Scott Kazmir, these pitchers who could move. And fantasy owners tend to get excited when their players get traded because usually they get traded from, you know, also-rans to contenders. Yeah. But that doesn't always really help their fantasy value. I mean, you can look at it. A good example is Jason Hammel last season went from the Cubs to the A's. You know, that's a pitcher-friendly park and, you know, a quality team last season and had a lot of struggles right away and then slowly kind of got his act together. If I'm, you know, Cueto's going to move, it seems almost 100%.
Sure.
I'm not really that excited about that if I'm a Cueto owner because everything's clicking for him in Cincinnati. Everything's clicking for Kazmir in Oakland. And I know Kazmir could get on a more of a winning team, but, you know, you move him out of the ballpark. He just, like, these guys are, like, they're people and they're pitchers and they're not just fantasy commodities. You give them a different catcher, you know, a different pitching coach for the rest of the season. With the pitchers, I'm a little concerned if I'm the owner of any of those, you know, difference-making pitchers that they'll move, unless they've struggled a lot this season. Maybe, you know, if pitchers like Ian Kennedy or Andrew Cashner move, even out of San Diego, I might be happy about that because they haven't had a great season. Maybe that'll help them a little bit. There's kind of nowhere to go but up.
Yeah. So. When it comes to a guy like, you know, Kazmir or Cueto who have been awesome, you're kind of ask yourself, what's the margin for getting better? Like, Cueto's been amazing. Like, if he, say, this is random, but went to San Diego or somewhere that's a great environment to pitch, how much better do you really think Cueto can get? Like, is he going to post an ERA under 2 in the second half? Probably not. The margin is really slim for anybody to be able to do that. It's hard for Cueto or Kazmir to get a lot better. I agree that I'd be a little more interested in a guy like Mike Leake, who knows where he ends up. We saw Drew Smyly move to Tampa Bay last year, and it wasn't even necessary ballpark or defense, but the team had him pitching significantly differently. And once he's pitching differently, this is a different pitcher, just the way he approached. And maybe that's a coaching thing or whatever. And you're right. These guys are people and who knows about how they feel about moving and where they are. And then front office has their hands on things a lot differently. And so, yeah, I think the margin is small for some of these aces to improve. Whereas a lot of these other guys might be a little more intriguing just by, again, kind of taking a flyer on and see what happens in the second half.
So. Yeah, and if you want to look at someone, a pitcher who could improve a lot, I would say it's probably Jonathan Papelbon, just from the point perspective of getting save chances.
Yep.
He's held up his end of the bargain as opposed to the Phillies. They just haven't given him enough leads to protect. And if you put him on one of the top 10 teams in baseball in the closer role, he could just do what he's doing right now and do it once more every week, basically. Yeah. And that would be a big boom to his fantasy value.
He's a pitcher that when they signed that contract, it looked really bad. And I'm not sure the contract has been any better than I thought, but he's definitely pitched better than I thought. I thought he was, you know, getting old and could have been risky, but he's pitched well and he's still pitching great. He's as reliable as ever. And you're right. Wherever you put him, he'll get saves. He just needs the opportunities. So he could certainly be on the move. He's been vocal about wanting to be on the move. Yeah, you mentioned Padres starters. They're moving out of San Diego, but that could be interesting as well. What about Justin Upton? Do you think he could be moving? I mean, San Diego also finds himself a little bit on this weird bubble, but they have some valuable pieces that might be going.
Yeah, I think that he could be on the move because he's, you know, set for free agency at the end of the season. And the Padres, one thing, the Padres were so aggressive in buying in the offseason, and it hasn't really worked out. And unless it really changes course in the next 2 weeks, they might be just as aggressive in unloading those assets to try to retool for next season. You know, aggressive general managers might tend to be aggressive on both ends of the spectrum.
Sure.
He's actually been terrific at Petco this season, and his splits this season have favored playing at home, which I don't think many people saw coming.
Yeah.
So I don't think he automatically gets the leaving Petco boom. At the same time, the Padres haven't scored a lot of runs this season. So if you take him and plunk him into one of the better offenses in the league, and put him in the middle of a lineup, and you've got him on that quest, you know, for a payday at the end of the season, he could have a terrific final 2 months. The one thing I will say about his value is they've let him run a lot, and you just never know on another team, you know, different manager, different philosophy. Maybe he joins a new team, hits more home runs and drives in more runs, but runs a little less, and it doesn't change his overall fantasy value that much.
Yeah. Stolen bases a lot of times is one of those things that's not necessarily all talent decided. It can be totally situation of how often they send them and what they want to do with them. You know, we're talking about that with Mike Trout. So yeah, if he goes somewhere where they're not sending him as much, that could be a concern for sure. We mentioned Cueto and Kazmir. We didn't mention Cole Hamels, which is another big trade name that's always been talked about. Again, he's in a hitter-friendly park. He doesn't have a lot of run support. He's been known to not have run support with the Phillies. I know I said there's not a huge margin for improvement on some of these aces, but you'd think just about anywhere it goes has to help, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just not getting that vibe that necessarily he's going to get traded. His name seems to be included in all the, you know, trade deadline articles, but people, you know, the insiders haven't really come up with much on him being traded and what the Phillies are looking for. And their front office is in a bit of a state of flux right now. So yes. I don't know. And he's always tradable and maybe even more tradable as he gets later and later in that massive contract. So if they don't want to trade him now, you know, if I ran the Phillies, I would probably trade him now and not risk holding him and having him suffer an injury and lose the value. But they could choose to just hold him until the offseason. There will still be many teams that want to trade for him over the winter.
And yeah, that all comes down to that front office, which, like you said, is in flux, and they've had trouble selling off in the past and deciding exactly what they're going to do. And it's also a little bit of maybe people looking out for their jobs a little bit, and this is like their last really good trading piece, and they know they need to do it right. And so that's why you've seen a lot of rumors, but I don't think the trigger has been pulled, so... You're right. It makes sense that he should be moving somewhere, but they're not going to do it unless they, you know, find the right deal. And with guys like Leak and Cueto and Kazmir as the lower risk rentals, that might make more sense for the team. So not sure if Hamels is going anywhere, but if he does, that's could be a big deal for him. Get some run support, get into a better park, because he's always been reliable on the mound for sure. We're going to sprinkle in a handful of Twitter questions here on the show. We're going to save some for the end, but also felt that some of them are a little more relevant. We mentioned Papelbon, and you got a question from Hada0401, tweeted at us, said, better closer rest of the season, Jim Johnson or Ken Giles? And Ken Giles would be pitching behind Papelbon, but if Papelbon moves, he seems like the guy to obviously step in. So that's a pretty good looking ahead question to this deadline. Jim Johnson obviously moved into the Braves closer role for now, but Giles could definitely be a big second half closer. What are you thinking there about those two pitchers and then up against each other?
Yeah, I wouldn't buy too heavily on Jim Johnson just because he could be on the move again soon.
Yep.
Just as Grilly might have been. So, and I do feel pretty optimistic that Papelbon will be traded. Like you mentioned earlier, he's basically begging them to trade him from every angle he can come up with.
Yeah.
For a rebuilding team, I just don't think they need that presence. I mean, we could have had this exact same conversation a year ago about him, and he didn't get traded, but it's another year. It's another year further into his contract. He's a little more affordable now for teams. I really, I think he will be traded. And I wouldn't really invest in Jim Johnson because of the fact that he could get traded. I mean, if Jim Johnson's sitting on waivers and you're in a deep league, go ahead and pick him up, but I'm not enthused about adding him.
Yep. He's getting saves now, and if he needs saves, he's doing it. And he's been fine this year, not dominant, but he's been fine. He's the guy for right now, but if you're definitely looking at second half and you have to pick one or the other, a little more farsighted might be Giles for sure. And he's definitely a more intriguing fantasy pitcher in terms of strikeouts and whatnot. And you'd agree and assume that that closer role goes straight to him as soon as Papelbon leaves, yeah?
Absolutely. There are no other options there. And he, like you mentioned, he has a really nice closer, you know, closer in waiting profile, good strikeout rate, low ratios, enough major league experience that he should be comfortable. Like, and that's really something the Phillies could build off. I know that closer is not really the first thing you need to build when you're rebuilding, but it's just for a team that hasn't had a lot of good news this season, and that's a nice springboard. Yep. It's a piece. He emerges as closer. They've got, you know, Franco playing well at third base, Cesar Hernandez playing well. So it starts to give them a few pieces that they feel like they have in place.
Yep. And yeah, he would all of a sudden become a completely relevant fantasy closer. He has the talent to be, I don't know, top 15 already.
Yeah. Opportunities could be hard to come by, but he should convert the ones that are there. He could basically immediately become similarly valued to where Papelbon is right now.
Yep. Okay. And then we mentioned, you know, Jim Johnson might be out of town, so there's still saves to be had in Atlanta. And if he goes, that's not a great bullpen either, but Luis Avalon, and they mentioned Arodys Vizcaíno. I might have pronounced that right. That was close. But those two guys could also be in line for saves should Jim Johnson hit the road. Do you see anything from those two guys? I mean, again, there's saves to be had, but is there much upside?
Yeah, I think not really. I mean, they could even go committee if they trade Jim Johnson and just let all these inexperienced closers, you know, have a little shot. I've even heard some speculation that Mike Foltynewicz could get in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're still using him as a starter, and I think that they still would like him long-term to be a starter. But if they, you know, put him in a relief role late in the season, minimize his innings, have him help the club a little bit, maybe they throw him in for some save chances. I think all of those players are only NL only options. Yep. If Johnson's trade. Johnson, I'll give deep mixed, sure, as long as he's the Braves closer, but not, the other players, I don't think, unless they make the Johnson trade and then come right out and say, you know, this player is our new closer, but I don't think that'll necessarily happen.
Yeah, there's not a lot of upside there. Are there any other closers that you have your eye on heading into the trade deadline? That's going to be, you know, that can be the most obvious fantasy impact a lot of times, is simply a closer role changes and a guy's value can completely appear or completely disappear. Yeah, any other bullpens that you're going to keep an eye on as we get towards the trade deadline?
Yeah, I would keep an eye on the Brewers bullpen. You know, trading Francisco Rodriguez is a real option for them. Yeah. His contract's not bad for a team that's looking for either a closer or a setup man. And he's, like Papelbon, he's held up his end of the bargain on his contract and pitched well.
Yeah.
They could go to Will Smith if they do trade Rodriguez and see if he can emerge as their closer. Yep. And Smith's profile suggests that he could be a decent closer right away.
He's left-handed, but that hasn't stopped him. He's been pretty good out there, gets everybody out. So
sure, and I mean, we've seen Sean Doolittle, Jake McGee, you know, have good stretches, yeah, as left-handed closers. So
yeah, and again, there's not a whole lot of great options in Milwaukee either. So yeah, I could see that. I've heard rumors, small ones, murmurs, but do you think Craig Kimbrell could be out of San Diego also?
That's possible. And then, yeah, Benoit comes back as the closer. Although if they do go hard selling, and I mean, if they're trading Upton and starters in Kimbrel, then they're going hard selling, then Benoit himself could end up on the move too. But I mean, he's at least someone to stash, especially if you're a Kimbrel owner. Mm-hmm. This might be worth putting Benoit on your bench right now. Yep. Just wait and see how the whole thing shakes out.
Yep. San Diego's new front office has shown they are unpredictable, if nothing else. So keep an eye on that. I would not feel super great about Kimbrel right now. Obviously, he's one of the best closers, you know, when you have him on your team, but could be on the move. And wherever he goes, he'll be the closer, undoubtedly. But yeah, keep an eye on that San Diego situation as well. And then the other thing about the trade deadline, not only closers, but you have a little bit more experience than I do in this, but this can be a huge deal to NL and AL only owners, because if your guy leaves your league or joins a league, even more so than closers gaining and losing fantasy value, some guys simply disappear from your fantasy universe. Do you have any advice for guys in NL and AL only owners as we get close to this trade deadline?
Yeah, this is definitely the time, if you're in a fab league or if you're in a waiver priority league, you know, to save your spot. Mm-hmm. And even if you're not first, like, save your spot, because you could be third in the waiver priority or have the third most of your free agent acquisition budget left. And there could be three solid players that come over to your league.
Right.
And you can add a good piece. The other thing I want to remind fantasy owners is there's players traded after the end of July. Like, we always see some players traded, yep, in August. So if you don't get a player at the end of July, don't just think, oh, I can just go and blow all my remaining budget or give up my waiver position for almost nothing. There still could be another decent piece come across, you know, into your league. And the one other thing I'd remind owners is, if a good player comes into your league and you have the resources to get him, even if you don't need his skill set or position, yeah, I think it's worth, go ahead and get him, because in those deep leagues, resources are so scarce. And then you can always trade from there, assuming that you have a trade deadline in late August. You know, If Cueto comes to the American League and you're dominating pitching, by all means, go out and get him anyways.
Yeah.
And then go ahead and trade him for a stud hitter or at least a good hitter. Like, do your best, but you've got to add those assets in those deep leagues.
Right. It's the only time of year that kind of talent hits the waiver wire. It's really rare that a prospect comes up that's going to be that good. You know, like sometimes that happens and you want to win that waiver wire. Maybe Byron Buxton comes up and he hasn't been great yet, but that's a name that everybody rushes to grab. But it's never going to be as much as, you know, Johnny Cueto or Scott Kazmir all of a sudden becoming a part of your player pool. Spends pretty much everything you got, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially so late in the season. I mean, what are you saving it for? Really, the September call ups and rolling the dice on some of them. Forget it. Just go ahead and get the star.
Yep. So yeah, those guys, make sure you have your eye even more on the trade deadline, because that can make big changes in your format. All right, let's go ahead and do some buy or sell, followed by some pitch or ditch. But we're at the All-Star break. This is now time to look at first halves and second halves. And, you know, a little bit impressed by some things that are going on, but the question is, are these guys going to hold up heading into the second half? So we made a list of guys that had some pretty big first halves, but we got to kind of look what's going on. So we're going to start with Billy Burns, who is a player I liked in the preseason and then immediately didn't do much, went back down to AAA and then came back up, and he's been great filling in for Coco Crisp. What do you think about Billy Burns, Fred?
Yeah, I'm excited about him. You know, his speed is legit. Mm-hmm. He's found a way. He's found ways to get on base. I'd like to see him walk a little bit more, but he's hitting for average. He's really their spark plug, and there's no reason to hold him back on the base paths. He has a large number of steals. He didn't even play in April.
Yeah.
And he already has a large number of steals and a great stolen base percentage. So I think he's going to keep running. Steals is one of the best ways that young players and breakout players can sustain value.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his skill set. So I think if you're in the market for steals, he's a terrific target, because he's not just a one category guy. As their leadoff hitter, he's hitting for average and he's scoring runs.
Mm-hmm. Like I said about Lorenzo Cain, my only concern is that a lot of his value is coming in that average. I mean, obviously speed's the main thing, but if he can't hold that average up, maybe it's reaching a little less and the speed goes down. I'm worried that we've seen the ceiling for Billy Burns. That said, I don't expect him to crater. I don't expect it to disappear. I expect him to still be good in the second half. I don't know that it'll get better. At least that's my hunch. But yeah, I like him definitely. And I also feel like speed is not only a way that young players can impress and contribute, but speed is also one of those counting stat categories that you can make a big difference in late in the season or in the second half. I know I'm in leagues where I look at where I need my roto points and I'm falling way behind in speed, and one or two players can make a huge difference. You know, if you go acquire Billy Hamilton or Dee Gordon or, you know, at a much cheaper price, Billy Burns, you can make up ground there for sure. Would you feel that way? I feel like saves and steals might be the place you can make the biggest impression on in the roto standings.
Yeah, and what excites me about Burns is he does have the speed and base stealing ability to be in that Dee Gordon class. Mm-hmm. If you look at other players, I think he's around 17 steals right now. So if you look at other players like a Brett Gardner or someone like that who's around 17 steals, you feel like Brett Gardner's, he's at that pace where he's going to have 25, maybe 30 steals, and he's just kind of go along at that pace. I have a hard time seeing Brett Gardner just swipe, like, you know, 25 bases in the second half. And I'm not saying Bill Burns is going to do that, but he does have the speed to post, you know, maybe not Billy Hamilton, but Dee Gordon, like, steal totals over a short stretch. So he's someone, if you need to make up in steals, you roll the dice on him and maybe you get, you know, the 9 steal month that really changes, you know, your category.
Yep. It's almost a Jerrod Dyson profile, but with a little bit more potential in the bat, I feel like, but that kind of game changing speed. All right, moving on. Cameron Maben kind of got thrown away and sent to Atlanta, and things look so far so good for him there. You know, the Padres probably weren't hoping that he was going to do this when they let him go. But you believe in Cameron Maben?
Yeah, I think I do. Cameron Maben is, I think he's kind of everything about what makes fantasy baseball so intriguing and so fun, in the sense of just when we finally gave up on him.
Yeah.
You know, he was well past prospect status. He had failed on a couple teams. He was getting traded to a team without a hitter-friendly park, you know, without really a certain role on that team. I mean, we had Eric Young at the beginning of the season, and people felt like he would help. And, you know, and then all of a sudden now he breaks out. Just when we least suspected it, he breaks out.
Yep.
But this breakout now has been going on for over 2 months, and it seems legit. And it's legit across the board. There's a little power there. There's some speed there.
Mm-hmm.
He's hitting for average. You know, everything here seems legit. I would be excited to kind of, if I own him, to keep him and ride this out and see where it goes the rest of the season.
Yeah, he's always shown great tools, but it's been a problem with, you know, staying healthy and getting the playing time. But he's still 28 years old. Like, he's not 31. Like, yeah, he's past the prospect status. He made his major league debut when he was 20. Like, it shouldn't shock you that he all of a sudden is putting it together. Do you believe in this, like, still in the prime thing, the magical 27-year-old age?
Well, maybe not necessarily, but, you know, at least, like you said, he's because he debuted so young, we feel like he's been around forever, but he is still in his prime. And this isn't a 34-year-old, you know, career minor leaguer breaking out. This is someone who's always had the tools to do this and just hasn't been able to get on base consistently.
Yep.
And it's working out now. And like I said, it's in the most surprising of circumstances, but it's happening, and it's happened for long enough now that, I mean, it's happened for over 2 months. If you own him and you can get two more months out of him at this production, now you're in the second half of September and you're laughing.
Yep. In 2011, he stole 40 bases for the Padres. And I realized that was 4 years ago, but the speed's definitely there, and he hit 9 home runs then. You know, if you have a 10 and 40 guy at that pace, and I realize, yeah, it was forever ago. The dude has always had talent. He's still 28, so I'd be excited about him in his new environment. How about Jimmy Paredes? Are you in on Jimmy Paredes?
Not to a great degree. The strikeout to walk rate is really poor, so maybe a little smoke and mirrors here. The degree to which I'll say I am in on him is the Orioles continue to run him out there against every right-hander and, you know, most days, and they are hitting him second still a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's a batting order that's good at the top and not maybe so great. It's just okay at the bottom. And as long as he's getting a lot of work in the two hole, like, he's right there with Machado, Adam Jones, and Chris Davis. And that allows him to compile counting stats almost by accident, just by being a decent player. So, you know, deep leagues, I'd want to own him. He's not someone that I would target in a trade unless I was getting him pretty cheap.
Yeah, he's been hot and cold, but he's definitely been hot lately. And, you know, he still has an 807 OPS in the first half. So despite his cold streaks, his numbers look good. Might be a little bit Babbitt-fueled, but he's also hit 10 home runs. So there's nothing to complain about, because I know fantasy owners did not pay a high price for him, you know, going into the year. So don't have huge expectations for the second half, but I'm not running away from him either. Fred, from your favorite team, the Blue Jays, you like Kevin Pillar? I know you got to be excited about Kevin Pillar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was his glove that got him into the lineup. Well, I'd say it was a combination of his glove and a little bit of desperation from the Blue Jays, because the Saunders injury and Dalton Pompey didn't hit at the beginning of the season or field very well. And they were kind of forced to turn to him. And then it's amazing when you think about how major league careers work out. He had that hit a slow stretch in the first half of May. And was a time where if the Blue Jays had options, they might have sent him to the bench and plug someone else in the starting lineup, but they didn't. So they stuck with him kind of because they had to. And now he's taken off, and he's been such a nice five category contributor this season. I mean, he's not amazing in any area, but, you know, he should steal over 20 bases this season, and, you know, double digit home runs, decent batting average, and he's in the highest scoring lineup in the league by a wide margin. So, and that helps prop up his counting stats. So he's someone I wouldn't maybe necessarily target in a trade, but I think fantasy owners still haven't really caught on to the fact that he is a useful player in almost every mixed league.
You can't leave him on the waiver wire in pretty much any format. If he's still sitting there, people in your league are sleeping.
I would have him active in most leagues. I mean, 10-team, 3 outfielder leagues, I wouldn't. But in most leagues, I would. In 5 outfielder leagues, I would have him active until he gave you a really good reason. And I mean a really good reason, not to, like, a 220 month, not a 220 week.
Yep. One more Blue Jay for you real quick. Tell me about Chris Colabello. What's going on here?
Yeah, he keeps hitting. He has slowed down a little bit, you know, just before the All-Star break. And I feel like after what we saw with the Twins last season, you know, maybe the clock will strike 12 on him at some point. I'm not as much buying into him as I am Pillar. I feel like Colabello's hitting, he's hitting well. He's being a little bit propped up by the great lineup around him.
Yeah.
His power's fine. The batting average is what's driving it.
Those numbers still count, you know. Yeah, it's a good lineup in the home park and maybe not true talent, but those numbers still count, you know.
No, absolutely. Yeah. He doesn't field well in the outfield, and I know that the team would like to not have him in the outfield if that's possible. They just don't really have another left field option at this point. And even though they're looking for pitching, they could look for a left fielder. If they find a way to not use him in the outfield, then his playing time could become more sporadic because Justin Smoke has actually played pretty well for them. Mm-hmm. And you need Encarnacion in the lineup. And unless they find a way to trade him, they still find a way to get Navarro in the lineup a couple times a week. So then if Colabello, like he could drop off into, you know, more of like four starts a week, which is okay, but probably not what you want in a mixed league.
Yep. And he just kind of reminds me of the opposite of Cameron Maybin of what we were just talking about. This is a guy who is past his prime. He is 31. He was not a big prospect, doesn't have a great pedigree, and all of a sudden he's succeeding. So there's a little more doubt on him. But again, as long as he's producing and he's in that great lineup, he's worth attention. And then real quick, we got to talk about Cesar Hernandez and what's going on at second base in Philadelphia.
Sure. I mean, you know, I think everyone was a little shocked by the comments coming out of Philadelphia, you know, that he might be the best second baseman on a team that still has Chase Utley. Mm-hmm. But he has played great lately. I mean, it's pretty small sample size. I've always liked his profile. He draws a fair amount of walks. And I love players who know their skill set and what they need to do to be successful. And I feel like he's always known, you know, if he can find a way to get on base, then his speed, you know, helps him make a difference for his team. And he's continuing to draw those walks. Now he's collecting more hits. That's giving him the chance to get steals. And when you think of the Phillies overall, there's not a lot to be optimistic about. I can't see any way they could sit a player who can field multiple positions and is hitting really well. Yeah. There's just no way. Even when Utley comes back, you know, no matter how they shake out second base, you know, Hernandez can play shortstop a couple days a week in place of Galvis and then play second base, you know, 3 days a week or something like that. They can find a way to get his bat in the lineup. I think he should be owned in most mixed leagues by owners that need steals.
Yep. He's going to find his way in as long as he keeps hitting like this. The speed is there. You know, not a lot else to get from that lineup, but the speed should be there. Let's real quick look at some pitcher ditch options going into this weekend, opening up after the All-Star break. Kind of want to get not only the matchups, but also what you're thinking in the second half for some of these pitchers. So real quick, are you buying Chris Young at all? It's all low BABIP fly ball stuff, but he's a veteran. He's done it before. It keeps his ratios low. Do you like Chris Young?
Yeah, so he's heading into play at the White Sox on Friday. And, you know, I would not use him probably for this start. Not a great park for his skill set. Mm-hmm. I think I would use him in home starts in most leagues until he really tails off. He did tail off late last season, so I'm worried about that. But I'm not worried about it yet. So I use him in home starts, and that's probably it.
Yeah, not getting you strikeouts, but if you don't need them, you're not on an innings limit where that'll impact you. He's definitely been a good spot starter. Tell me what's going on with Mike Montgomery. He goes to Yankee Stadium, which is almost never a good matchup, but he's just had a great stretch now with his Mariners debut. Are you buying Mike Montgomery at all? Probably not to stay this hot, but like, are you interested in him in the second half?
I'm interested. I would ditch him for this start just because I have a lot of respect for the Yankees lineup right now. But long term, yeah, I would buy into him. There's going to be that roster crunch, though, at some point, the rotation crunch. They've already cleared space for him for now, but Paxton will be back at some point. These things do have a way of working themselves out, and I would add him and not use him for this start, but be looking at him going forward.
Okay. Anybody else stick out to you on Friday?
There's some interesting matchups on Friday. Martin Perez is coming back for the Rangers, you know, from Tommy John surgery. Yep. I wouldn't pick him up in a mixed league right now, but I would want to see the start and then go from there. And the other one that I really notice on Friday is Robbie Ray. He's been pitching really well this season. And going back to when he was a member of the Tigers, he profiled as someone who was going to have major league success, and it didn't come as quickly as, you know, didn't come immediately. So I feel like owners just kind of tune him out. But he has a home start Friday against the Giants. I would be tempted to use him, or at least in shallower leagues, add him, ditch him, and then watch and see where you go from here. But he's an intriguing player right now.
Yep, he's a guy that has a good prospect pedigree that hadn't really shown it yet. You're waiting for the results, and then here they are. You know, it could be straightened something out, figured it out, and you want to be in on him early, not late, when he, you know, lives up to his potential. And then Saturday and Sunday, I got to ask you about Chase Anderson. Do you believe Chase Anderson? Because this is a guy that keeps putting not amazing, but very respectable low ratios, not a ton of strikeouts, but just been consistent so far, I think. And you don't hear him talked about much. Do you like Chase Anderson?
Yeah, I do. And I feel like he's one of the more underrated fantasy starters. He should be on mixed league teams. And like you said, the strikeout rate's not great, but it's not bad. Yeah. And, you know, it's not Chris Young like some of you just mentioned. And, you know, but he's been keeping the ratios down, and he's been doing this now for a fairly long time. He's well supported by a good offense there in Arizona. I would start him on Saturday against the Giants, and he's someone that I would want to own going forward.
Okay. And then let's talk about Scott Kazmir. Obviously owned in every format. He's going to Minnesota, though, and Minnesota is not a fearsome lineup, but they hit lefties, and that makes me a little bit nervous. Would you even trust him going to Minnesota?
I probably would, just because he's pitched so well this year, and I know he had the injury scare earlier this month, but he's pitched so well this season that I think I would use him. I think I would use Scott Kazmir right now in every start. Yeah. As long as he proves to be healthy, I would use him in every start.
I think you got to pitch him if you own him. Maybe something more like a DFS day. He's not where I would go because, again, Minnesota hits lefties. But I don't know. Yeah, when you have those good starters, you kind of got to start them every time out, I feel like, and just take their whole season as a lump. How about Manny Benuelos for Atlanta? He gets the Cubs. Do you like that on Saturday at all?
Yeah, why not? I mean, the Cubs strike out a lot.
Yeah.
Benuelos has been pitching really well. He's going to be at home, really pitcher-friendly park. Yeah, he's someone I think to pitch for sure. And, I mean, we've got this short week here, you know, the three-day week. So for owners in weekly leagues, you probably don't have, you know, say, seven starters on your roster who are starting in those 3 days. Mm-hmm. And Benuelos is the kind of pitcher you can go, you know, right after you hear this podcast, run out and check waivers. And if he's there, you could pick him up and maybe get – 5 or 6 strikeouts, and who knows whether you get a win or not, but you get some quality innings, a few strikeouts, and you own them for one game, and then you can evaluate from there. It's a chance to take advantage of that short week and the unusual schedule.
Yep. All right, let's look at Sunday real quick. I got two pitchers that are almost kind of similar. CeCe Sabathia gets Seattle, and Justin Verlander gets Baltimore. You got to be worried about both of these guys. Is there one you're less worried about?
I guess I'd be I'm a little less worried about Verlander, but not really.
Yeah.
To me, they're both drops in a mixed league. Not just, you know, ditch them for this start. I don't think I would own either one of them in a mixed league. In a deep mixed league, maybe I'd own Verlander, but I'd be ready to drop him as soon as someone off waivers. For example, I would drop him for Benuelos, you know, just mentioned right now, and just take my shot on the kid and hope that he pitches well the rest of the season.
I've abandoned ship on both of them, and I'm not proud of it. It's sad. But, you know, until they show that they've got it back together, you know, there's not really anything to cling on to right now. How about Carlos Carrasco goes to Cincinnati? He was kind of a preseason darling, and his peripheral numbers still look well, but it's been a little bit disappointing. Were you in on Carlos Carrasco in the preseason, and are you still in on him now?
Yeah, I wasn't in on him enough to actually own him in any leagues. Mm-hmm. That being said, I wasn't someone who was really skeptical on him. I just think there were so many owners who were super high on him, and I wasn't one of them. That being said, I think he could be a nice buy low right now. His strikeout to walk rate is outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
His ERA could come down in the second half. I would pitch him on Sunday, even at a tough ballpark like Cincinnati. I mean, it's National League, though. He gets face the pitcher. That could help a little bit. Mm-hmm. But bottom line, you know, he can get you double-digit strikeouts in any given start.
Yep.
I think he's worth the risk.
Yep. Any other starters on Sunday that stick out to you?
I'm really interested to see Taylor Youngman. I don't know if I pronounced that right, but Taylor Youngman has pitched really well for the Brewers. He's got a home start against Pittsburgh. I would be really on the fence on pitch or ditch with him. I think 15-team type league, I would pitch him. Shallow league, I might ditch him for one start. I definitely wouldn't drop. He has pitched great. His last start, he faced the Dodgers, who lead the majors in OPS against right-handers, and he was terrific against them. You know, every time out, he's been pitching really well. So I think he's someone that maybe you need to add. Like we were talking about with Robbie Ray, add him now and see where these next few starts go before everybody else wants him.
And in that Milwaukee rotation, there's an opportunity. If he pitches well, they're going to let him keep going. You know, there's
yeah, and they could be sellers. Yeah, and they could, like we were talking about trade deadline, like Milwaukee's a popular seller. They might not have all their current starters in 2 weeks anyways.
Yeah, so there's an opportunity for him in the second half. All right, we're about out of time, but we want to get to prospects real quick because I know this is a popular thing for a lot of you guys in your deeper leagues, your dynasty leagues, your keeper leagues. And this has kind of been the year of the call-up. A lot of really exciting guys have come up, but there's always some more down on the farm. We had a Twitter question from PG3Phil asked, Matt Wisler or Brian Johnson has more upside? Let's start with that. We talked about Brian Johnson. Are you in on Matt Wisler?
Yeah, I feel like he has more upside than Johnson. Mm-hmm. Just because he's got an easier road to hoe right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being on Atlanta, he's got an easier ballpark, home ballpark to pitch in. The National League East is full of mediocre lineups right now. Even the Nationals have played pretty well, but they're banged up. The Mets do not have a good lineup. The Marlins do not have a good lineup, and they're banged up. The Phillies do not have a good lineup. You know, later in the season when he faces a lot of divisional opponents, he should have a pretty easy schedule in comparison to Johnson. And he's looked really good. The strikeouts totals were low in his initial starts, but now they're starting to come up, and he even handled Coors Field well, you know, last time out. So I feel like he has more upside. Even though I like Johnson, I feel like Whistler has more upside.
Okay. And then who else is on your watch list right now for the second half? In your deeper formats or especially your keeper leagues, guys that might come up and possibly make an impact?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Aaron Nola from the Phillies, a pitcher, should be up, you know, later this month, maybe as soon as later this month, if not early August. And he profiles as a pretty polished pitcher who should have success right away. I do think pitching for the Phillies will limit his potential to get wins and, you know, and to have success. They also don't have a great defense. So, I mean, he's not going to have anything helping him. I really like Luis Severino, Yankees prospect, and there are holes in that Yankees rotation. You know, Sabathia hasn't pitched well. Eovaldi hasn't really pitched well. Yeah. There's an opportunity there, but because of the profile of those players, and they still have Adam Warren in the bullpen, like, they might need some guys to go on the disabled list for him to get a chance. I feel like Nola has a better chance to get to the majors. Severino has more upside if he gets there.
Sure.
You know, and if you're going to look hitter, I think Dalton Pompey, who we already mentioned, he's been raking in double A recently. And the Blue Jays still, as I mentioned, you know, when we were talking about Colabello, they still have that hole defensively in left field. And if they play Ezekiel Carrera, then they have a hole offensively in left field. So they need help in left field, and they might need all their trade deadline resources for pitching. So I could see Pompey getting a shot again, you know, around the 1st of August, if not sooner.
Yeah, they liked him. They obviously like him. He got the starting job out of spring training, and that didn't go great for him, but it's not like they're going to give up on him. You know, he can certainly hit his way back in, especially in that AL East that is so competitive right now. You know, they need a shot in the arm. They need some help. We could see Dalton Pompey. And the name of the game with him, he's been a good on-base guy in the minor leagues, and he runs. It's another guy that could definitely make an impact, stealing bases and scoring runs in that awesome lineup, as we mentioned. So keep an eye out for Pompey. I mean, he's got to come up in September, if not before, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Michael Saunders keeps getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. So, I mean, you could have a guy, like we talked about with Pilar, you could have a player who's a decent hitter and joins the best lineup in baseball and the most productive team in baseball, and all of a sudden is, you know, get it compiling counting stats pretty quickly.
Yep. All right. And then one more name. This one gets brought up a lot. Just give me a quick yes or no. Is Corey Seager come up before September?
I'm going to go with no. Unless Jimmy Rollins is injured, I'm going to go with no. And I think they just let Rollins keep going and working on what he can do. I just don't see them putting someone as well known as Jimmy Rollins on the bench unless he really forced their hand to do that.
Yep. But could be up in September. And even then, I don't know what impact he's really going to make. You know,
they're
for straws.
Yeah, they're so deep. I mean, people are talking about Hector Olivera, and like, could he come up? And Justin Turner's playing great, and Alex Guerrero can't get in the lineup. And
you know, Enrique Hernandez isn't bad.
Yeah, there's just so many pieces there.
Yeah, so Corey Seager will probably be a popular sleeper in 2016, but I would not stress about him in your redraft leagues right now. Okay, Fred, we ran a little long, but anything else you got before we get out of here?
No, that was terrific. I really enjoyed, you know, want to thank Mike and Corey for giving us the chance to guest co-host this week. It was like really enjoyable. Make sure everyone listening, you know, follow the @fantasy411 Twitter handle, and, you know, and get your questions answered and get great advice there.
Yeah, we're both active over there. I like to hear from you guys, and check out MLB.com/fantasy where, lots of fantasy advice always going on. Always linking to the podcast as well. So, that should about do it for us here on our guest edition of the 411. Again, I'm Dylan Higgins with Fred Zinke. Thanks. We'll talk to you guys next time.